Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 2nd, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday. Joining us to look back in this week, in the new era of the greatest minority elected president in the is it possible in the history of the country?
I'm almost certain it's who lost by a larger popular vote margin and became president besides him.
I don't know. Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Not that guy. Cliff Schechter's not the guy.
He's not the
who
minority
won the presidency
president.
With the greatest deficit in votes ever.
It'll be really interesting to see how Cliff Schechter dealt with that specific situation, though. That would be fascinating.
Also on the program, Andy Kindler. One of the country's foremost comedians who has also the most amount of acclaim with the fewest number of people who... No, I'm just going by his Twitter.
He has a really
thing.
Deep audience.
It's Casual Friday, folks. Matt's wearing his stained t-shirt. I just noticed his famous stained t-shirt. Oh, my God. Also on the program today, House Science Committee thinks winter proves that there's no global climate change. And by the House Science Committee, I don't mean like a random house. I mean the U.S. Congress. World leaders are joining us in panic over Trump. Paul Ryan claims he's tutoring Trump on the Constitution.
So what we can do is we can make more kids poor, but you can't have Tamron Hall murdered for saying it looks like you have a cold. You see what I'm saying there?
James Mattis, retired Marine General, to be the illegal defense secretary nominee. And... Rule 41, Senator Ron Wyden calls one of the biggest mistakes in surveillance policy ever. Think about that. Is now in effect as of today. And that time Mike Pence traded carrier jobs for less energy efficiency.
Oh, well, it's not how I'd... Oh, oh.
Michigan sues to halt the recount. And, again, final numbers are in. Hillary Clinton lost three states by 79,000 votes, won the nation by over 2.5 million. All that and more. A little update on the electors. We don't know much about it. It's those electors in Colorado on Wednesday... are trying to start a 527 group that called the Hamilton Electors, which would raise money to deal with the different state regulations that would charge a fine to electors if they did not vote for Donald Trump, if they were electors who were essentially elected for to vote for Donald Trump. As of now, there is supposedly one Republican elector who has agreed not to vote with Trump. 36 shy.
Can we use the Constitution to kill him?
I mean...
I'm not getting it, Pa.
Well, it's... I guess we'll find out if there's more going forward. We'll see. We shall see. Last night, I tuned into Chris Hayes' program after Puts All to Bed, which ended up being like at 9:30 or something. I record that show occasionally. Turned it on, preempted for Donald Trump, had to turn it off immediately. Here's my prediction. You're not going to see much more of that, because my sense is it attracted viewers when they would preempt stuff for a Trump speech when people perceived it as a freak sideshow. And, you know, I guess arguably, if you want someone to make an argument, it is a freak sideshow. Guy still got under 47%, which is the ceiling for Republican presidential nominees. He got 2.5 million less votes than the Clinton campaign. I mean, at the end of the day, had the Clinton campaign been even marginally more competent and aware of what was going on the ground, was not knocking on one or two doors per, or three doors per 10 people to get out the vote in Pennsylvania. I mean, so
that's an unreal stat.
It is. So, I mean, arguably he's still a freak show, but I don't think people perceive him as a side freak show anymore, because he's not. Now he's just sort of a real nightmare. So I think you're going to see a lot less of that on your TVs going forward. Even I think CNN is going to find that their ratings are going to go down, and you're going to see a lot less of Donald Trump than we did during the campaign. But that's a long way of me saying that I didn't have to shave last night because I wasn't on Chris Hayes' program. But you do know. I mean, you must know this by now, right? Harry's has been probably our longest, most reliable sponsor of this program. Everyone in this office uses a Harry's razor. I'm still looking at Matt with a huge stain on his shirt that he's like now sporting as if it's a design. So I don't know.
You just need some type of like delivery cleaning service.
I'm cleanly shaved though.
It's true. Now for me, the thing I love most about Harry's, it's a good shave. I don't like to shave that often, but I don't spend the kind of money I used to, which really drove me crazy.
Crazy.
If you haven't heard of them before, Harry's was started by two best friends, Jeff and Andy, who were fed up with being overcharged for razors. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. This holiday, Harry's is offering a limited edition shaving set. Midnight blue chrome razor handle, which you can get engraved with initials. This is like the perfect brother-in-law gift. I'm going to give this to both of them. Three of Harry's German-engineered five-blade cartridges that provide a close, comfortable shave, foaming shave cream that smells amazing, beautifully designed gift box, goes for $30 on harrys.com. They also offer handles and starting sets at $10 if you haven't tried Harry's for yourself. Why is this great for a brother? Because I don't know what those guys are doing.
We need to figure out what the hell is going on with the
brother. I don't know what they do with their life on a regular basis. They live... You know, I don't see them that often.
I don't know who you are. I just know your sister.
I do know they shave. Exactly. I do know they shave. And it's a great product. So, boom. I mean, it's a great gift. Free shipping goes until December 9th. So, act now. Go to harrys.com right now to get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. Don't forget to enter the code MajorityReport and get $5 off. That's harrys.com, code Majority Report. I think that's, I think that's a great gift.
It is.
Harry's, I give it to my dad. Gift. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know. Figure out what
I
the
know
hell
him
is
less than
on.
I know my brother-in-laws.
So Saul, meanwhile, tough time getting him to bed for whatever reason. If he naps at school, it's over. Like he's up until like 11 o'clock. But once he gets in bed, he sleeps like a baby. Partly because he is a baby, but more, he's not a baby now. He's like almost 3 to 4. I don't know. He's somewhere in that age range. But the reason why I sleep so well, Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. And he's the one who's got the Casper mattress in the house, much to the chagrin of really all of us at this point. Mattresses, as you know, can cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin size mattress, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. Combine springy latex and supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. It's true. An in-house team of engineers spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. It's breathable. The design helps you regulate your temperature throughout the night. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. And here's the best part of it. Try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. They deliver it to you. You try it for 99 nights. You say, like, I don't think I like it. You send it back. They pick it up, and they refund you everything. It's made in America. Free shipping and returns to U.S. and to Canada. You can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/majority using the offer code MAJORITY. Terms and conditions apply. Check it out. Casper and Harry's probably my two favorite products.
I might get myself a Casper. A Casper mattress.
You should?
Maybe. But I'm going to also, you made me realize that I should get my brother-in-law a Harry's subscription because I do know what he is doing and it is continuing to grow a wizard beard and he won't stop.
You know what I would get my brother-in-law for the holidays? Nothing.
Is that Peter Thiel?
Does
he have a brother-in-law?
It's none of your business. And if you expose that I have a brother-in-law, I'm going to get shut down.
We're going to go to Cliff Schechter in just a moment, but this stood out to me. So Donald Trump is having one of these rallies, part of his thank you tour. So he's going to states that he won. And aside from the fact that, like, I can't believe that the networks are preempting anything for this. And also just contemplate the idea of, like, when, like, the idea that they are trumpeting his $7 million for 800 jobs and they're picking up, like, press conferences when he goes to carry. Does anybody remember the auto bailout where literally, like, 1 million to 2 million jobs were on the line?
The entire auto industry was safe, right?
Well, not just the auto.
Industries.
Every tangential. Yeah. So, and this is just, there's two things to be disturbing about all this. The one disturbing part is that there's Trump all over the TV. The other disturbing part is that Greg Gutfeld becomes the voice of reason.
He's still not funny, though, just to be clear.
I just said the voice of reason, not the voice of humor. But here he is on the five, God forgive us, and making a very solid point about, just for a moment, try and picture anybody, any other president doing this.
People, I think that he has to talk unity because I'm going to enter the hypocritical world that no one cares about. But if Obama had done a victory lap, this network would explode. We would be frothing. We'd have pitchforks running down Pennsylvania Avenue. So we had, but I realized, you know,
didn't he have something like
that? No, for 8 years.
Oh, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we gave him a hard time for the permanent campaign.
No, that was that was after he became president.
He didn't do it after the election.
Yeah, well, I guess. Well, whatever. Bygones. 8 years. I mean, honestly, had Barack Obama gone on a thank you tour to the states that he won?
And also, not only the states I won, all the black people in the states that I won. Thanks again. F you, white people, you're the worst.
And it's not just, I mean, look, it's not just Fox News, right? Like, every TV outlet in the country, every opinion writer would be talking about the country needs to be brought together. He should be going to the states he lost, not the states he won. But we don't hear that with Donald Trump, except for from God help us, Greg Gutfeld.
Oof,
all right.
We're in bad shape here.
Take it where you can get it these days, folks. That's all I can tell you. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, even in this era of, or error, I should say, of minority president elector, Donald Trump, we still have some touchstones. This is one of them.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff Schachter. How are you?
I am doing well, Sam, all things considered. How are you doing?
My understanding is the virus was in your state last night.
Yes. He's worse than in my state. He was in my city, which I made sure to point out to people via the Twitter machine that we were one of two counties in Ohio that went bigger for Hillary than we did for Obama. So we can't feel all that bad here. Maybe he's coming here to try to shore up himself already. Really, you know, he's here just to have people throw flowers at him and tell him how awesome he is.
Where's John Kasich? What does he do? Does he go on like a mini vacation for the weekend when Trump comes to town or what?
I don't know. It's going to be really interesting, that part of things, because Kasich, you know, the whole thing in his mind, the whole kind of lineup, he's very close to the state party chairman of the Republican Party here. And for them, Trump loses. Hopefully Kasich wins, but even if Kasich doesn't lose, he was, you know, Kasich was going to try to get behind this guy to be the head of the RNC. And so now they're kind of out in the cold. And it's interesting because, you know, Romney was invited into the White House, as everybody knows. And he said some pretty rough things about Trump, none of which were untrue during the campaign. But so far, there doesn't seem to be any thawing in the icy relationship there. So I don't know what Kasich does because he very clearly wanted to run in 2020. I think what he sits around and does is he prays that Trump is as bad as we all know he will be, and that maybe he can challenge him in a primary.
Mm.
Like, see, I'm the grown-up in the Republican Party. I don't know.
Since we're talking about that rally in Cincinnati last night, we have a brief clip, which is, and like I say, I just said I couldn't stomach it. I didn't watch any of it, but this I heard about this moment, which was sort of fascinating. Donald Trump is there. He's got the rug on, and he's surrounded behind him by, you know, a bunch of Ohioans. I don't want to note that it's completely white in that audience, but nevertheless, it is.
You should probably note that.
But that is the nature of his victory. But I like white people. Some of my best friends are white people. But
there's
here's
some decent white people out there, sure.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure some of them are good people. And
right.
Here he is.
They
this
don't
is
spend enough time though denouncing the bad ones.
So he's reading off the teleprompter, which my understanding is that presidents are not supposed to do that. But he's reading off of the teleprompter.
White presidents can do that.
He's reading off the teleprompter and denouncing bigotry and hatred. And the look on his supporters behind him is precious. I know you can't see this, but I'm going to play it because you can just hear the sort of like grudging support for these sentiments. Yeah, here it is.
We condemn bigotry and prejudice in all of its forms. We denounce all of the hatred. And we forcefully reject the language of exclusion and separation. We're going to come together. We have no choice. We have to. And it's better. It's better.
No, nobody's clapping. Nobody's.
I mean, everybody's like, what?
Yeah, one guy said, everybody's like, people are that took like literally that, like people took that as like a bathroom break.
Right. I'm just going to say the opposite of, I mean, it's not even like just specifically bigotry and which obviously is a main course through any Donald Trump speech and whatever, but the language of exclusion like, that's all he does.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a race, religion, or it's just somebody who he's pissed off that didn't say something nice enough about him or didn't nominate him for a Grammy or didn't, you know, I mean, his entire life is about exclusion, about attacking people for various reasons. It's hilarious.
As Michael would say, that's his core brand proposition.
Yes.
That's what
that
I would say.
Value proposition, if you will.
Yes. So, I mean, I just found that fascinating. But, you know, let's talk about this a little bit, because over the past couple of weeks, and this is what happens after an election, right, is that people argue as to the reason why the presidential candidate lost. And invariably, well, in particularly in a situation like this, where I actually think there was literally a half a dozen, maybe more, things that could have changed and Clinton wins. I mean, remember now, we're talking 79,000 votes over the course of three states. And then she won an additional.
And that's not even including Florida, where it's fallen under 100,000, I believe.
Too. Right. I mean, here's what the numbers are at this moment. Hillary down 22,000 in Wisconsin, down 10,000, almost 11,000 in Michigan, Pennsylvania, 46,500. We know in Pennsylvania, at the very least, that they just simply screwed up. I mean, they were knocking on doors that were Trump voters to get out the vote. And Wisconsin, you know, Michigan, I mean,
Wisconsin and Michigan, they didn't even show up.
Right.
And again, I'm not saying this even to just be nasty or whatever, but just pointing out they didn't show up in Wisconsin and they barely showed up only at the very end when the numbers started going way south on them in Michigan. So yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot. I agree with you. I think there's at least a dozen things I can think of that could have tilted or left to change things.
So what happens in that instance is that people focus on the reason as one of those things so that it is consistent with where they want the party to go in some respects.
Right.
Which exactly. I, you know, personally, when it's this close, right, when you still have won by 2.5 million votes, and at the very least, the things that they could control, they screwed up as far as I'm concerned. You know, you argue for where the party should go, where it should go, not where it has to go because of the election. And so, I mean, there's a lot of questioning as to, like, what should the leadership be going forward? What do Democrats need to do? What does the left broadly need to do? As opposed to, like, what should they do? Which to me has been fairly consistent throughout. There was a piece that I know you took a look at by was it Paul Waldman?
Waldman at the Plum Line.
Yeah, and it was how Democrats can build a real opposition to Donald Trump. And this question of how to build an opposition, I think, is really important because, you know, I had critiqued a Cenk Uygur a video the other day. I mean, it was sort of like almost like a meta critique as opposed to sort of the.
Was that the one where he complimented
Trump
on Carrier? Because I just saw some people get upset about it on Twitter.
Yes,
I didn't really watch it, but yeah.
Yes, and some of the analysis I agreed with, but the idea that he should be praised because of his strength, it seems to me, is completely wrong, And so this raises the sort of the dilemma that we have here is that I'm quite convinced that it's possible we can attack this guy in such a way that that slows the conservative agenda, but in some way feeds into the authoritarian the potential for an authoritarian agenda. Like, you know, we're as scary
right.
as things we're seeing right now. We could be one terrorist attack away from something far, far scarier, it seems to me.
Right.
And
no, it's true. I mean, even in some of the opposition, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. We have to do it. But there is a risk. Of course there is. Because it's always, you know, a strong man always has a very simple line of reasoning how they can come in and they can cut through all the crap. And obviously some of the opposition is going to be protests. Some of it is going to be, could be obstruction in the Senate. There's an inherent risk in that. But, you know, at the same time, you're not going to just let Trump get everything he wants, are you?
Well,
or
no. And
anything, if it's the crazy stuff he keeps saying he wants. So,
but on one hand, I mean, here's how the dilemma plays out from a tactical standpoint. So with this carrier situation, I have no problem leveraging the federal contracts, right? And saying, in fact, Bernie Sanders has had legislation proposed to this effect for quite some time. But the legislation he's talking about is making a policy as opposed to the whimsy of one of the president. Like, I'm going to choose this company to do it here. I mean, forget whether or not he's sincere. Of course he doesn't give a crap, right? I mean, of course he doesn't. But forget about that. It doesn't matter. I mean, it was a smart political move to make an issue of it. Clinton should have made more of an issue of that type of stuff, too, whether or not she had any intention of doing something meaningful, because Donald Trump has not done anything meaningful. Yes, for those 800 people. But on the flip side, there's going to be all sorts of job losses in other ways. But the fact is that the Democrats need to push for things like policy as opposed to whimsy by the president. There needs to be law that provides this, as opposed, there needs to be some institutional checks on stuff like this, as opposed to just the whimsy of a president making a deal. But at the same time, Democrats, I think, also have to be willing to throw out certain norms to stop the Republicans, just like the Republicans have been doing.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I believe very much that the norms have you know, held things in check to the degree they have been held in check, as Republicans have become more and more sort of radical outliers, all the stuff that Norm Ornstein said about them in his book. But if you look at, you know, history and how democracies have been toppled, and when one side becomes extreme, if the other side still tries to play by the same rules and, you know, and be a little too nice, they'll get killed. I mean, that's just the way it is. So I agree. While, I mean, it's what I've been saying about the Supreme Court pick. You know what I mean? Which is, they've stolen a Supreme Court pick. It was not theirs to pick. And Dahlia Lithwick wrote a great piece about this in Slate. I mean, to me, you either make a recess appointment, which, again, it only solves any problem for a year.
Right.
But at least it's something. It's a show of defiance. Or, you know, you filibuster anybody and say it's not Trump's pick to make, because it's just like it wasn't Obama's. The problem is I'm sure they'll get rid of the filibuster then. So I would almost definitively make the recess pick. But, of course, that's not how Obama operates. So I have no expectation he'll do that.
Yeah, I mean, even with the threat of them getting rid of the filibuster, I think they've got to do that. I think they have to. I think they have to filibuster, and I think they can say, "Look,
oh, I agree.
You guys said let the American public decide, and that you didn't say let the electors decide on the Supreme Court pick. You said let the American public decide. They did decide. Now, Donald Trump's president, but he shouldn't get
heading towards 3 million votes,
right? But Barack Obama was president." It's not just being president that makes it.
But he's black.
But,
I mean,
the argument was, it's not that he's the president. It's that the American public should pick. And so if that argument worked for a year, you know, you filibuster, you do what you can.
Well, let's wait to 4 years till we have a president who actually is picked by a majority of people. I mean, I agree. They should just block it. The problem is, again, what they should do, whether it's the recess pick or it's this, and what they will do, because do you see Joe Manchin and Donnelly, you know, and Heitkamp and people like that, filibuster? I just don't.
Right.
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I guess maybe they won't be able to get up to 60 votes they need, you know, depending if they'll have 51 or 52 after Louisiana. And they need 8 people like that. They may only find 5, I hope.
Right.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be the big issue. I mean, I really do think that is, and then it becomes a question of leadership in the House and the Senate. And, you know, Paul Waldman's piece was, I guess, written to a certain extent in response to people who were saying that Nancy Pelosi shouldn't be the minority leader in the House.
What were your feelings on that, Sam?
I mean, I was certainly open to somebody else, you know, being the leader, but I don't know who that person was. I certainly didn't want Steny Hoyer, and I would love for him not to be
definitely not Steny Hoyer. That's going in the wrong direction.
Definitely going the wrong direction. But I think the argument that Waldman made, I'm not impressed by Ryan. I don't think he has particularly progressive bona fides. And I guess if he had been able to marshal more votes, then that would have been indicative of his ability to marshal more votes from his caucus. I mean, for me,
it's true. And that would have made the argument. I supported a change, and I supported tentatively Tim Ryan if he could do it. Not because I have anything against Nancy Pelosi, and I do think she's done some great things legislatively, but I also think there is a point in time, you know, in parliamentary democracies, you lose, you resign. And there have been a number of elections where we've had a choice to get, you know, had a chance to get this much more right, and we haven't. So it's really not an saying, you know, I don't want her to resign from Congress, but I think you give new people a shot at leadership. That's kind of my feeling on it.
All right, but I mean, what about Waldman's argument that, look, it's not really Nancy Pelosi's job per se to get people elected to Congress. I mean, that's certainly part of it, but it's not.
And I agree with some of what Waldman said. Where I disagree with him there is that she has appointed the chair of the DCCC, and she's kind of made an argument that that's her prerogative to do. And the Republican caucus, they elect the chair of the NRCC, the counterpart. And I think it should be the same on the Democratic side.
That's changed, hasn't it, though? Hasn't it changed? Didn't she just decide to basically capitulate to...
Oh, did she?
My understanding is
all for. I didn't see that.
My understanding is yes. I agree with you on that because that Steve Israel.
They've been terrible.
They've been horrible.
You can't sit here. I mean, look at what you know. There are a number of seats. The classic example is the one in Texas. You know where Hillary Clinton won the vote in, I guess it was the Pete Sessions district or whatever. We had nobody on the ballot there. We just gave them. That was one of those the few places where that kind of. You know, the vote that Democrats are hoping would carry them over and win the whole thing, that kind of some of the breakaway Republicans and kind of more moderate, you know, suburban Republicans, well-educated, I guess the sort of education gap type thing, did come into play. And we just, you know, that's a perfect example. We didn't even try there, right? And there's a number of other places. I just think that they're recruiting. They you know, and there's a strong case to be made if you follow this stuff closely at all, which I try to, that some people write about, you know, Howie Klein is one, and I know Howie can get kind of extreme, but I think he makes a good point sometimes, which is they almost seem like sometimes that it is the minute a progressive beats their sort of DLC, you know, new Democratic type person that they want in there, then they pull money from the race. You say, screw it, we're not going to support you.
Right.
And, I mean, they've done this in a number of cases. So I think it's been egregious that Nancy Pelosi has kept appointing these people. You know, Steve Israel, who was a blue dog. You know, Ray Lujan, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I apologize. Who I think is also sort of new Democratish.
Yep.
I mean, we need somebody who will support progressives running in places where they can win, and that hasn't been happening.
All right, so
here's
my understanding, is that yesterday – the Democratic caucus voted to make the DCCC chairmanship an elected position, that Lujan is expected to run again and to maybe win because, I don't know, apparently there's still some sense, but we'll see if somebody challenges
but
him.
But at least if he wins, then he'll have won and the whole caucus will have looked at his results.
Yep.
And said, okay, well, we endorse that.
I
think that they're wrong. I think, you know, when you have a year like we just had and you only win a half dozen seats, you know, whatever happened with the Electoral College, Hillary Clinton still did win by 2.5 to 3 million votes. I would expect a little bit, you know, I know it's gerrymandered and terrible, but there were 20 to 30 targeted seats there. And there are a number of places that didn't even have recruits. So, you know, my feeling is somebody knew, but if they endorse that, at least the caucus got to vote. So,
right.
That's a good thing.
No, I agree with that. And I would love a different leadership in the Senate, but I will tell you this because I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about Pelosi is that she's been here before. And it's not a question of, you know, with this type of stuff, when you have no power, it's not simply a question of you know, are you a fighter or not a fighter or this? A part of it is just like literally knowing the mechanics of this stuff and knowing how you
institutional knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's so important for this, you know, in these type of situations, because you're going to need someone who can actually sort of wage this fight. you know, that's the thing that I'm, I frankly, I am, and I may be alone in this, but that's the thing that concerns me about Harry Reid leaving, because I think that Harry Reid in a defensive posture is quite strong. I mean, you know, relative.
Yeah, I think he's been very effective in the last few years.
Now, I mean, it's not to speak necessarily to his progressive bona fides, although I don't think there was anybody more adamant about Social Security than Harry Reid.
He was one of the few that fought for the public option too, as I remember it. Look, on some social issues, he was more conservative. I think he became more progressive as time went on, but he was a good leader. And just to sort of, now that you brought up this that I did not know about Nancy Pelosi, I will say, if that means, you know, her staying in leadership because she's a great legislative leader, which she has proven to be pretty good at the legislative mechanics, I'm fine with that. My big problem was, you know, saying, okay, you get to appoint the person to
right.
Win
no,
back
I agree. They, win. There's
so
been.
I feel somewhat better about her being leader in that case. A lot better, actually, because she, if she'll stay, you know, if we can, if the caucus can pick somebody else.
I mean, people forget, how many times have we seen the Republicans say, like, we're going to vote on this, and then they don't have the votes for it. And they've made the affirmative decision to vote. You know, whenever she took a vote, she knew what the vote count was. And she knew it with this election, too, for her to speaker. I mean, and at this point, like that's what we need. You know, we need to play defense. And sometimes that is... You know, again, this is one of the arguments that I was making about why it was so important that Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump, is that in a defensive posture, right, it becomes a popular front. You are fighting alongside, the David Frums of the world at this point, which makes me absolutely nauseous. But let's get back to that Waldman piece, because he makes some very good points about what needs to happen as a in terms of infrastructure for the Democrats at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, he says that they need a permanent mobilization, registering voters, you know, turning. I mean, there's no doubt that the machinery all of that, and I can tell you that from having lived in a swing state, it seems like it shows up here once every 4 years and then kind of disappears. And maybe it was a little different back in Howard Dean's day. Maybe, you know, Keith Ellison or whoever ends up winning would change things now that we would have more of an emphasis on a 50-state strategy. But you need to be talking to people. You need to be registering people. You need to be constantly persuading people, which it turns out was a problem with this election. Like, this needs to be a constant effort. You can't parachute in every once in a while. You're already up against it. You know, I mean, talk about shooting yourself in the foot. You know, we've shot ourselves in pretty much every part of our body, right? I mean, you know, we've handed the other side the media by which to, you know, and I will, as with anyone else, put a lot of blame squarely on Bill Clinton for that, for the Telecommunications Act in 96, that's allowed so much, you know, of the right wing to get such a grip on many parts of our media in a way that they wouldn't have been able to do. And so, you know, already you're going up against that battle where you're at a disadvantage starting off, you know, financially. Often you're going to be at a disadvantage too, when you're going up against the Koch brothers and what they're willing to put into, you know, everything from grassroots to media to think tanks. And then, of course, I mean, you know, even the think tanks themselves that are churning out policy papers and giving you talking points that everybody can repeat, where, you know, we don't have anything close to what they have. So at the very least, we'd better be on the ground talking to people and doing it constantly and registering and persuading. And we haven't been doing that.
Let me just make a note about that media thing. There was a graph that was put out. This is... I'm not sure who put out this graph, but it was data based on articles referencing either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton in the headline, but not both, in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, Wall Street Journal, Slate, Politico, Fox News, and the Weekly Standard. This is from the Data Face, I think it's called. And they did this graph, and it's basically looks like a frequency, a wave that goes through. And the middle is parity. Trump at the top at 100%, Clinton at the bottom at 100%, and gives you a sense of their share of the news coverage. Whenever it was above parity, closer to Trump with 100%, it was a myriad of different things. There was only three times, the three biggest, the four biggest times that it crossed parity and went towards Clinton was in...
Let me guess. Emails, Clinton Foundation.
Nope. Here it is. In mid-June, it reached its peak. In mid-June, it reached its peak with the FBI statement.
Of course, right.
And then in mid-July, it was the DNC. And then in September, it was Clinton illness. And then in mid-October, it was the Comey letter. That's it. I mean, those are the three times it crosses the parity line. With Trump's, it's literally like 90% of it is above the parity line. And I'm sure some of it was negative. Some of it was the RNC. Some of it was the debates. Some of it was the Access Hollywood tape. The Access Hollywood tape was not even up there. It was not even relatively close. It was, it seems to be about 50%.
So, I mean, and that is the thing. And look, some of this is coming from decisions made. We know that there's many different factors. We've discussed them. Some of the editorial decisions based upon needing to make a profit. That's a big problem. You know, and sensationalistic values and the rest. But it still does come down to, you know, you have an entire network in Fox News that is on 24/7 and is considered mainstream media, that when they put something out there, the New York Times picks it up or Politico picks it up or whoever, and it's covered. And they've shown absolutely zero interest in any sort of journalistic standards at all. So it's not even just sort of, well, they're biased in their selection of what they cover, and they're covering stories that make liberals look bad and conservatives look good. Like, I'd accept the argument the Huffington Post, you know, is a pretty big outlet on the left that more often is coming from a left-leaning perspective, much more often. That's fine. But at Fox News, you've got people literally making things up. And it makes it into their, you know, at FoxNews.com and on their show and whatever. And that affects how NBC and ABC and people cover things. And so there's just, you just can't expect any, you know, right away you're at a big disadvantage just because of that.
Yep. I agree. I mean, I think that is the, that is what's, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand, and why there have been times where I've gotten very annoyed at what's happening with even just small media outlets like ours. Because this is the stuff, this impacts, like, you know, there, if people contemplate it as concentric circles, right? And smaller media outlets have an outsized voice with other journalists because they're on Twitter. They're the ones who are, all this stuff, the amount of people on Twitter who are talking about politics is relative to the country. I don't know. It could be not much larger than the margin of Hillary Clinton's victory, frankly. But it has outsized influence.
True.
It has outsized influence because so many of those people are journalists. And that's where they're, you know, unless they're getting out in, and even then, like, you know, it's like we're all ants on an elephant, right? We think we're seeing the part of, we think we can describe the elephant, but it just looks like the part of the elephant that we're on. And Twitter gives people sometimes, and Facebook give people sometimes a wrong perspective on what that elephant looks like. And certainly, those people who are pumping out videos and have small audiences who are out there active on Twitter, they can shape this debate in an outsized fashion. And so, I mean, people have to be conscious of that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, again, I don't want to get into the huge discussion on this because we've had this discussion enough times before, but there's just no doubt that beyond even the big networks, the beyond Fox or, you know, Breitbart or Drudge or whatever, and we know Breitbart, you know, the Mercer family, classic example. Do you have a Mercer family funding you, Sam?
I mean, I'm open to them. You know,
yeah,
they're
I
in New York.
Are, but,
I mean,
anybody from the left similar to that just come along and dump millions in your lap? Maybe. I don't know about it. But,
well, I mean,
you know, this,
I'm willing to open up a special Mercer family membership level. For the
the new billion-dollar level.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's yeah, I mean, that is the point. Is that the you know, and I think like, look, I think it's unlikely that we're going to see that type of thing on the left because, I mean,
no,
frankly,
we won't. I mean,
there's a concern from I think even you know a wealthy leftist that A lot of the what people like I would talk about would make it less possible for them to be billionaires, frankly. And I mean, you know,
yeah.
you know, my experience just at Air America was that the money that came into Air America often came in with a sort of a sideways agenda. And folks like the Democracy Alliance and Soros, to my knowledge, never funded Air America. And if they did, it was just sort of like it was tiny, tiny toe dip type of money. But I don't even think it was that, frankly.
Right.
You know, the money came in from, you know, several individuals who all had sort of a third agenda. And at you know, so much so that they would bring in people
almost
like
a third way agenda.
Well, you know, it wasn't quite that. It was like, I've got to prove that, you know, I want to hang out with Hollywood liberals, or I want to position myself for a position in, you know, the Clinton administration, if it ever happens, or I want to position myself with the Obama administration in some way. And then the problem is that they're bringing in people who literally half the people who worked at Air America at any given time, if they had donated any money to politics ever, had donated to Mitt Romney. You know, I mean, it was
right.
that type of situation. So there has to be,
right.
you know, I think that may change, to be honest with you, because I think, you know, Trump represents something that is, I think, hopefully these people perceive as far more, you know, problematic, but they have to do what the right does, which is just
abhorrent.
Yes. Just dump money into like by well, now you and I both should have received, like, we should be saying like, well, actually, I'm sorry. I'm obligated to some other millionaire at this point.
That's right. We should. Yeah, exactly. We should each have our own millionaire. That's what I think. Who just takes care of us.
Well,
no, I mean, but in all seriousness, having done enough of this stuff for years and you've done enough of this stuff for years, you know, like I mean, I used to debate on some of these shows, you know, Kellyanne Conway, right?
Right.
She's been pretty well taken care of. You know, and I don't mean that in a sexist way, because pick any number of the guys and they've been pretty well taken care of too. Oh, I don't know, a talentless hack like Tucker Carlson. I mean, it's just, it's a different situation. You know, when you go in on the right, you know that there's any number of think tanks that'll be like, hey, look, here's an endowed chair for $100,000 or $150,000 a year. Right, think, and argue. That's what I expect of you.
You know,
do it on TV, do it in radio, go give speeches at universities, write stuff. And that's just nothing like that exists.
No.
You know? And
for some reason on the right, they are willing to fund operational costs. And on the left, they are willing only to do project-based stuff. And that is what
that's
is
exactly
problematic.
Right.
Is that...
Yeah, because, I mean, look, I mean, you know, and I'm not... Don't... And should anybody think that I'm, you know, it's sour, I'm being bitter or whatever, I'm not at all. Look, I ended up going and doing what I do, which is PR and direct mail, and I love it. But what it leaves me time for is this show on Fridays, an occasional TV hit here and there. I get to write for the Daily Beast when I've got time, but that's when I've got time. You know what I mean? And I have to choose between the stuff that, you know, you could argue the PR stuff I'm doing, a lot of it's for progressive causes, so it's good work. Hopefully it helps what we all do, but it still doesn't change the fact that you know, I can't sit around and think, how can I get this argument across in this place because I've got money coming in? I have to make sure the money is coming in. And that's the difference between people on the left and on the right, is that people on the right don't have to worry about that. The money part's taken care of, and they know they're set up, and it's like, let's think about the best possible ways that we can cause trouble for the other side and advance our cause. And there's just very few opportunities like that on the left. I'm not saying nothing exists, a few things here and there, but it's not nothing compared to the other side. I mean, something like the Center for American Progress, which is probably the biggest think tank on the left, it's not even what, I mean, what would you think? I'd have to estimate, but I bet it's not even a third of the size of just the Heritage Foundation.
Yeah,
it's and you're not even counting AEI and all the other ones, Cato and the rest.
Right. I mean, so, there's just not nearly the infrastructure. And I let me just say, I'm not interested in the millionaire thing. I mean, if you want to buy a bunch of you know, dirty hippie memberships on our site, that's fine. But I'm just saying, broadly speaking, there should be 40 of me out there You know, and not me, right. obviously, but there should be 40. There should be 40 of these enterprises out there. They're going to have to step in and create another Air America, or and hopefully that's happening right. on some level. But I mean,
I'm just saying, it's just sad because I've seen a number of my friends. I mean, worst case scenario, you know, I have no one that works at a natural gas company now. You know what I mean? Like these are people who had talent. And they literally could not stay on the left because they couldn't make it work. They couldn't afford to pay their rent.
Right. You know and I'm thinking in terms of like bloggers and whatnot. And, you know, we don't have that infrastructure anymore that existed during the Netroots. And part of it was because most of the people could not sustain it. They could not work basically two and a half jobs.
Most of them were in our age range, Sam, and the ones I knew anyhow. And so back when we were doing that is when we were sort of a response to George W. Bush and sort of, you know, horrified that it didn't seem like the rest of the country was as offended as we were. You know, a lot of us at that time were in our, you know, I was in my, mid-20s? You know, mid to late 20s, late 20s. And I wasn't married. I didn't have kids.
Late 40s at that time.
It was just
time.
A different...
I'm joking.
I'm sorry?
I think I was in my late 40s, early 50s maybe at that time. I'm not sure.
Definitely. You're like 75 now. I mean, the point is that a lot of us were able to try a lot of different things, but then there is a point where you have to find what works because, you know, we live in a society where you do have bills to pay. And I saw people who I used to debate on Fox and places like that invited into the right-wing world and taken care of. And I saw friends of mine on the left not invited into that world, any world like that. And now they're all over the place doing all sorts of different things, most of whom have left politics. And there are some very talented people. And so I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping that they fund something along the lines of Air America so other people can get involved.
And frankly, they need to start. Need I mean, more. You know, there needs to be, I mean, you know, you're dealing with like literally hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars on, you know, that is coming in from the right on the state level. This is where, you know, somebody's got to match this cash, right? I mean, you see a guy like Russ Feingold, who's outspent like 6-7 to 1 in Wisconsin. And, you know, there's no reason why he should have lost that election, but he was just inundated by cash that turned him into some type of like, professional politician. I mean,
you can lose. You can be outspent 2-1 and win. You can even be outspent 3-1 and win. The number of times you're going to be outspent 6-7, 10-1 and win are very few and far between. It just gets to be a point where if you can't answer enough of the charges, they're going to stick.
Now, it's true. If you are a reality TV star and you know how to go on television and get free coverage, then you don't need the cash. You just need the services in kind. But, you know, that's not happening with local TV. He's not doing that.
Services, if you've got Jeff Zucker servicing you, then you'll be fine.
Right.
Because you'll get all your rallies covered. But I don't know many congressional candidates or others who can expect to have all of their stuff covered with billions of dollars of free TV. The Trump case is not one you can compare to anything else because, as you said, he was somebody who was famous and he was somebody who they knew would say all the kind of outrageous things that he says. And so it made for good TV and that's all that mattered as far as they were concerned. But that's not usual because there's no other person almost ever who's going to get billions of dollars of free TV. And by the way, he still lost by 2.5 million votes.
Right.
I mean, it's just the way the states lined up with our crazy electoral college. But in the end, even with all the billions of dollars, guess what? He was vastly outspent on advertising, whatever, and he lost. You know, I mean, in terms of popular votes, he'll have lost by the kinds of margins that, a lot of the time we look at with victors over, by bigger margin than people who actually won the presidency.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of all important to take into account here.
Well, this stuff, now is the time, I guess, where we're going to have more conversations about what needs to be done. And then, you know, we're only several weeks away from what we're doing. Right. I mean, this is I think there's a lot of people out there just sort of contemplating what the strategies, what the tactics should be. And I guess we'll see going forward. And we'll have a better sense of what, as the cabinet gets rounded out, what the agenda is going to be. But my sense is right now, Mike Pence is just sitting there penciling it out. But we've got to, we'll talk more about this perhaps next week.
Sounds good, man.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, Cliff. You too. All right, folks, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the great Andy Kindler. Maybe he has some answers for us. We'll be right back after this. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure. And every time we have this person on, I'm amazed that we could get him on. I mean, it's a pretty impressive get. And
it's quite a coup. It's quite a coup, as Guevara said to Castro.
That wasn't actually a coup,
Andy.
But nevertheless,
sure? That was a great line.
Well, and then Che turned to Fidel and said, "Fidel, play the theme song again. I love it."
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the "God Bless America" song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song. Andy Kindler.
Oh, the most delightful anti-Semitic melody ever written.
There you go. We only have the most delightful anti-Semitic melodies ever possible.
What kind of name is Reefer Cake, right? Is that German? Lugan Press Reefer Cake.
So now, Andy.
Lugan Comic.
Jimmy Reefer Cake, of course. Did both the theme songs that we played today for both our guests. You can find out more at All the Hypocrisy. .com. I don't know how you say that in German, but
all the hypocrisy of the Jews. Smoke weed, perception, reality.
Now, Andy, how long before you become the OG Trump bot, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I like that guy. I just saw a guy from Shark Tank, your favorite show.
Yes.
He's on there singing the praises of the carrier deal. On MSNBC, and I...
What? Is that the Canadian guy?
I'm only two floors up.
Who is that, the Canadian guy from Shark Tank? Which one is Shark Tank?
I could not focus on his name. He's like, he's kind of balding.
Yes, it's that Canadian guy. Yes, yeah. That Canadian guy. He's a Canadian sort of...
Oh, yes, right. He said project or something like that. He was Canadian, and he couldn't be more thrilled. Brilliant. It's unbelievable. How does he do it? He's a wheeler dealer. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
And that guy just got free Trump travel at all the hotels. He's got he just got three Trump stars for that or something. Membership rewards.
Maybe. By the way, I really am angry at Cliff. for saying that Tucker Carlson is a talentless hack. He's not that good.
Andy,
well, I should definitely have not arrested the development of this show with that line.
Right, exactly. You don't want us to go when they go low, buddy. We go, we go lower.
Really low.
We try and go lower.
I'm actually
super
quite
low.
Excited about this segment because this is the first time that Andy has been on since Donald Trump has won.
It's
and
true.
I look forward to cuck tears.
Cuck tears.
I hope there's going to be new Hogan's Heroes based on Trump. I don't know why.
Well, how are you doing, Andy? I mean, how are you
I'm not doing that well. I mean, you know, I'm interviewing for some jobs in the Trump administration. First of all, I didn't see it coming. We were all there election night. None of us saw it coming, and I had developed a false sense of Obama-like optimism about the future of the country, and also had bought into that things happen in a rational way. In some manner, and it's all come crashing down. However, I'm particularly angry, and I like to be angry because that's all I have now. When I think back at these people who I hate even more than the Trumpian people, and I'm talking about Maureen Dowd. I mean, yes, it's sad that it was so. This is the year that it was dangerous for her to vote. That's the name of her book. I certainly hope she made it to the polls.
Wait,
okay.
It was dangerous for her to...
Well, she wrote the book, The Year of Voting Dangerously, Maureen Dowd, where she basically, it's like this whole thing of where they are, it's that cynical, both-siderism from what you would think would be, well, I don't know, maybe she's just an idiot, but I see that, or Andrew Sullivan has to tell us how much he hates Hillary before he's going to say, and now I'm voting for her. You know, I didn't need his endorsement.
To be fair, I did that too.
That's Michael Brooks.
People hurt me.
I mean,
is that what you did too, Michael?
I mean, look.
I didn't say I hate her. No.
I mean, I think, you know, there was, I think people thought this was going to turn out a different way. I mean, we have still have people who are tweeting us who are nominally on the left. I mean, look, someone like Andrew Sullivan, you know, whatever. But people who are nominally on the left who are like, Trump, Clinton, no difference, both enemies. Well, you know what? I mean, even if that's the case, and to a certain extent, I can appreciate that sentiment. Does really, you know, if I'm going into an alley, do I really want to fight someone who's got a gun and a knife? Or do I want to go in and fight someone who's like got two broken arms? And, you know, you can pick your enemies.
I like that. I have a gun and a knife. Save time.
Well, the point being that you pick your enemies, right? Like if you the left had a lot more leverage with Hillary Clinton than they do with Donald Trump, it seems to me. But
yeah, well, I don't understand. I just don't understand the whole... first of all, there's this whole thing of like when I was younger, you know, and when I say younger, I mean 2004 when Kerry ran.
Right.
You know, Kerry said this one thing, which was like, "Well, I voted for it first, and I voted for it." You know, like it was a big thing. It was like a flip flop, you know, big flip flop fingers at a rally. It's like it used to be one or two lies, and you were done. This guy lied about everything. Everything has changed. There is no, and a lot of it is like, this idea that there is no people think it's, and on the left too, they think it's fake. They think it's all rigged. This idea that it's all rigged on the left and the right has caused just this terrible, cynical point of view that it's just. You just can't argue. There's no rational argument that you want Trump, that having Trump, a guy who literally has no ability to form ideas, and who, you know, so who are you going to trust? How is he going to make a decision? Is whoever he's going to, whatever crazy person he's put in his cabinet position, who he's talking to at the time, how can you rationally argue that that's the same as Hillary being president? It's just crazy. And add your own joke here, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
I form a lot of ideas. Oh man, Andy's feeling it.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's horrible. It's just horrible.
And now my understanding is you keep getting blocked by people on Twitter. Is that right? Did you tweet me saying that David Cross had blocked you?
Oh no, he didn't block me. I have a problem, and this is a problem I need to address. And if I don't address it soon, I'll be somewhere locked away. He was following me, and then he unfollowed me. And instead of being a normal human being, like a regular person, where I could maybe call him and say, hey, why did you unfollow me? I say on Twitter, why did you unfollow me? Well, he probably just hit the wrong button or something. So now he's following me again. But the less of this story is that I don't have any boundaries.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and that Bill Maher's an asshole.
Well, but Bill Maher, yeah, I mean, Bill Maher's using this opportunity to, like, go further against the Muslims. I mean, there's a lot of people on the left. Like, I don't even know who these people are. I just, like, there's a guy, Michael Tracy, I don't know who he is. All of a sudden, and then it's just like they see these, I don't understand it. I don't understand how this whole, like, left-wing equating Hillary with Trump, it's not a small movement. It's a large, I don't know how large it is, but it's a big movement on the left, I think.
I mean, I think it's, you know, there's certainly a decent number of people, but I think it's to a large extent they've forgotten or didn't see what happened under the Bush years. I mean, this is not to, and I think my feelings on Hillary Clinton are fairly well, have been fairly well articulated. But This is simply a question of physics, right? I mean, in my mind, you don't this idea that you gain by going 5 steps, 6 steps, 10 steps backwards. Yeah, you may gain 2 steps, but you're going 10 steps backwards. You may be sitting at the head of the table, but now it's the kids' table. It's no longer at the adult table, so you don't have access to the wine anyways. Now it's just like you may have more milk at the kids' table.
Right.
And,
I get into these feuds all the time. It's like this guy, I'll give you a perfect example, like this guy, Josh Barrow. I can't stand this guy. He writes, I don't know, he's on Chris Hayes' house. I just literally can't stand this guy. Here's a guy who just left the GOP, and he spends all his time saying why the left lost and what they go. And one of his tweets was, he goes, you know, next time the Democrats should run somebody. What is this? Democrats should run somebody. You know, I'm sorry people didn't like Hillary Clinton, but Bernie Sanders lost. He didn't lose because it was rigged. Do you know how many people on the left think it was rigged? She wouldn't have been my first candidate, but it wasn't rigged.
Right.
You go out there and organize yourself. Bernie Sanders did not win the nomination, period. It's not because the DNC or Donna Brazile wrote an email. And so when you have this guy, Josh Barrow, it's like, obviously, you know, I just heckle him all day long because I was like, you left a party that you helped. If you left this year, that means you were a part of it when it became racist and you didn't care about it that it became racist. And now you're going to start telling me why Hillary's bad? I say no, Sam.
Well, I mean, look, let's face it. I think there was a certain amount of incompetence on the campaign. And if you just took away, if they had just been, I think, made one or two strategic differences and a couple of tactical differences, that's it. Then you're just talking about Hillary Clinton narrowly winning those three key states, but winning the overall election by over 2.5 million votes, by over 2 percentage points. And boom, that's, Donald Trump, we're just watching his sideshow again, and we're just watching him, go around the country and try and salvage what's left of his sort of corrupt business practices. But
right. But
that's not what happened. And, you know, everybody needs a hot take and a story about it. But let me turn to something else, because right now here's the thing is that, like, when the Republicans control everything, it becomes more about the culture, because they can't talk about what's going on with government, it seems to me. This has been my experience. You know, the height of the war on Christmas was when the Republicans controlled everything, because there was very little to get outraged by. So with that said, this headline in, was it the Hollywood Reporter? I want to get your take to this. And this is going to, Andy, like, if you're not aware of this, I almost feel like I should ask if there's anybody home with you right now. And if there's not, if there's anybody who has the keys to your house in the event that you have a heart attack, because you're going to get so angry when I tell you about this that I'm looking at.
Let me get my nitroglycerin at least arm's length from me.
Corolla to explore university safe spaces in upcoming documentary, which he is co-hosting with Dennis Prager.
Oh my God! It's okay. Nobody better tell me if this ever is this going to be a TV show or what's it going to be?
It's going to be. I'll read it after. Let's see. It's a document. College campuses say who will star with talk show host Dennis Prager in a film called No Safe Spaces.
If anyone tells me about this or they as a prank, Ashton Kutcher like prank, they stick it in my DVR. Don't do it. Don't send it to me as a link. I swear to God, I will kill myself. I will commit whatever it's called, seppuku, whatever it's called, Harry Carry, whatever you want to call it, any other malapropism, I will kill myself. Two of the biggest horses' asses in the history of the world getting together to find, and they're going to be on campuses going, hey, have we triggered you? Have we triggered you? We have a, I mean, this is, and this is the thing that, that Seinfeld was a part of too, where he didn't play colleges but claimed that they were too PC. Because his French king joke didn't go over.
gay French king. Like, I'm doing my great French king gay joke, and it's not going over. Colleges are wrong.
Take me back to my ivory tower, where I can literally avoid college gigs that I never took. It's like, one. You know, I've said this before. It's like, he got one, like, a groan maybe, or he didn't get a big laugh from his gay French king bit. You know, 10 years from now, it's not going to be funny to think of gay people making all kinds of, like, swervy motions. You know, hopefully I can still do my gay choreographer material. I hope that's always. And one and two and three and four and hello. Hopefully that will always be delightful. I cannot believe this is happening.
My favorite joke of yours is when you say, that guy's a real man, and then you take your wrist and make it limp. And that just killed.
But I'm commenting on anti-gay people
right.
when I do it.
Right. Corolla's not able to do that. Like, it's so dangerous that we have safe spaces and campuses because now he's not able to do those transgender emancipation jokes that he was going to do. The ones that were really secretly for transgender rights that Corolla cared about.
George
so
Carlin.
Well, one time I heard
today.
Him on—I forgot what he was on. He was on a podcast talking about Cher's son. Cher, who's?
I don't.
Cher's what? Sex change? Cher.
Cher's.
Cher.
I don't know.
Bruce
Didn't
Jenner
Cher's
is Cher's
daughter
son?
Have a sex change?
No, I have no idea.
Possibly.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Can't believe no one's remembering this now.
I mean, I
who am I mixing up?
We
am
should
I
just,
mixing up
you know what? Honestly, just take your time. We should take up a couple of minutes just to remember this right now.
Bono's son.
Cher?
Come on, people.
Come on.
Chaz. Chaz Bono.
Okay.
Chaz Cher.
What are you guys, 90 years old? This is happening now.
No, what
or
are
maybe
you, 90
old.
Years old?
I forget. Who's... Anyway, he was.
Kelly
Cher.
Says you're right.
Kelly's really
right.
intense about this.
No. Well, it was kind of driving me crazy for a second. It's Chaz Bono. You're correct. It's Cher's.
Chaz. Right, but the more you talk about this, I sound like a guy who doesn't accept transgender people.
Don't
no,
you know
no,
about
no,
Chaz
guy,
Bono wants to use my bathroom?
Girl,
God damn it!
I just I don't I there's nothing I don't know that I was aware.
You don't read people. You don't read people.
All but, of a sudden, Cher's daughter's in my bathroom. It's unbelievable.
I
forgot what got me on that now.
I just remember picking up People magazine. The last time I did was like, I think like when I was in LA in a waiting room to pitch somebody. And there was like some layout of Marin and I had to throw the magazine away. I couldn't take it. It was like Marin, David Wayne, and maybe Sarah. And I was just like, what am I doing?
You got cocked.
Well, that's because you said you don't. And, you know, you lied before, Bruce. I know that you are constantly trying to get millionaires and billionaires to back you, your show.
I mean, it's true. Dear Mr.
And
Millionaire,
I've seen
I'm
you
writing
at so many of those Hollywood parties or New York versions of them?
Oh, definitely. I was at Jean Georges myself the other day, which is the, according, apparently, Josh Barrow tweeted out, like, it's the lowest price of the three-star Michelin restaurants. Or...
Oh, Josh Barrow. The best tweet was, he goes, he does a joke about what one of the hotels calls their frequent stay program. Hey, is there any worse name than the Marriott Explorer? No, we don't all have hotel cards that we think it's hilarious.
Do you not have a hotel card? How is that possible? You must travel all over the
place.
No,
I do. I lied about that. But I don't make jokes about them. What's up with the new Hilton premium program?
When you start doing
like
those
the silver
corporate industrials, as you will. You'll just go like, hey, like, how many of us here are here on the Marriott? I don't know.
Who else thinks it's hilarious to do a reference about something that when most people never even spend time at a hotel? But I just wanted the people listening to the show to realize they don't probably know who Dennis Prager is. I bet a lot of people listening to the Majority Report do not know how horrible Dennis Prager is. He was a local AM talk radio guy who got popular in the 90s. And he's used to be on when Tom Snyder was alive. He was on his show a lot. Uh-huh. And he's this phony values. The liberals are this. He is the.
Does he have Prager University? Like he'd say, yes, like Prager University, where it's basically, I think it's like just all about how the Palestinians are a horrible people, I think it is.
Yes, and your wife should have sex with you no matter what.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, he wrote an essay. Pretty much being
well, I
like
that.
Well, that's what's wrong with that observation.
Well, I mean, certain things that people I don't agree with say are actually things that when you think about it, maybe they're actually good. Who am I doing now? What is that? No, yeah, he did a thing about how Muslims should act. It's almost like if you don't want to get rounded up,
right.
You should act in the following ways.
Make sure you wear like a flag lapel pin if you're a Muslim or something.
Make a snarky comment about hijab. I never get that word. Is it hijabs?
Yeah.
I haven't had a hijab since the 90s.
Now,
who's with me? Hijab?
Now,
I don't like any job.
What are you doing? Are you
point.
Going? Are you going on the road? Have you been doing stand-up around?
Not with
or
that.
It...
Not with this material.
No. Oh, I like the
no, but
hijab
I mean,
joke.
Is it like? I mean, I have this feeling like when I go out and about. That, you know, I keep referencing this, but I was watching some kids play on a soccer field the other day, and I was at a park with Saul, and I just, like, was watching these kids play, and all I could think of was, like, this must be what, like, Pompeii felt like. Like, just before, like, the volcano, and everybody's frozen in position. Like, I don't know, like, I walk around, like, how are people acting normal? Because... I mean, do you have that when you go into, are you doing stand-up? Like when you go out to
Well,
like,
I just did, I was just
Chuckle
in your
Huts.
Area and I feel bad because I didn't get a chance to either you guys. But I was at Union Hall and there was this fight, like I went to this thing on the first show, like it wasn't like a Tom Hanks breakdown in Punchline, but it was, which nobody knows the reference.
I
just went to this thing where I had all this Trump material. I thought I wouldn't be able to use it anymore after the election. I wasn't anticipating on ever bringing his name up. And now, what do I talk about? And I just went to, and of course, this is a friendly crowd, too.
Right.
So it wasn't like, you know, where I'm going to have problems and maybe I won't have problems. So I don't go to like the Deep South. But it was like, it is this like, what do we do now? It just seems hard to do regular material when the world could end on January 21st.
Well, to be fair, it's going to take at least 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Let me write that down. Let me tell my survivalist contractor.
That's got to be weird. I would imagine like doing a show in Brooklyn is probably not as weird as like going out to like, I don't know, Bakersfield and doing the Chuckle Huts out there.
No, and there were not, of course, you know, I assume there were no Trump people there, but it was just my own angst about... Just not ready for it. Of course, I could also say that I haven't been working on my act that much recently too. But so it was a perfect storm. But because of my Twitter addiction. But it's a very strange time period. I mean, I am a positive person. I'm an optimistic person. So I do believe the 3 or 4 or 5 of us will survive.
Is your wife aware of what's going on with you on Twitter?
Yes, and she doesn't enjoy it. And my tendency to overshare is like, I'm having a problem with boundaries, telling people, you know, my tuna sandwich is wilting. Well, not that bad, but actually that could be a tweet later. Let me write that down.
But wait a second. You're concerned about you revealing too much about what's going on at home or what?
No. It's like, it's like when I argue with trolls or whatever the thing is, it's like none of these things are going to help me now. It's right. Like, I have this big issue with, it's like, for a perfect example, Leah Remini has this show on A&E because she was a Scientologist.
Right.
And so I say, you know, I think it's great what you're doing, Leah. It's a very brave thing you're doing, because when they had Comedy Central's Root of All Evil, I argued, you know, I studied Scientology a bit and argued that it was the root of all evil. And then someone comes in, you know, argues with me, what's the difference between Scientology and Islam? And so it's like, you know, I'm arguing with people about Islam is a religion. Scientology is a cult. This is an obvious thing. I can't believe we're arguing these things, and that people, it's like when you're a Muslim or you're a Jewish person, when you go to a temple, they don't say, look, we have a book, but we're not going to show it to you until you pay us a series of monthly payments. It's like this. Any intelligent person can see the difference between Scientology and other religions. And then, of course, religions get perverted and they get manipulated. So it's like I go down these rabbit holes.
Those are the only institutions.
2016, and we're arguing against religion. You know, against people's right to observe religion.
Right. Religion's the only institutions that get manipulated and corrupted in some way.
That's right. And if there was an atheist group, like with Richard Dawkins in charge and Sam Harris, I'm sure there would be no problems with that group because of their high secular ethics.
And to be fair, I have to say that last week it was like, we're about to open up the Torah arc, but if you could just maybe make a pledge.
That would be like, are you saying that anybody would pay under threat that they weren't going to open up the Torah? Is that what you're claiming?
You want to see the Torah. You want to see the big one. We'll open up the we'll bring out the smaller Torah, but we're not going to bring out the big one.
But don't you think it's distressing? Distressing is me arguing.
Well, I think you need to realize. I would say two things to you. I would say, one, realize that there's always going to be somebody, right? I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, there are people who, you know, I don't know, who think that there are half the shows on TV are funny. I mean, I don't even know what I'm referencing, but Two Broke Girls is funny. I mean, there are people who think that's funny. Is it a funny show? I have never seen it. No.
It's right, not funny. No,
there,
it's
but there
funny.
Are people who must think it's funny.
Good.
But, the other thing is mute. You can mute people.
Right. And
learn the art
and
of
I should.
Mute.
You should
and
be doing
so,
that.
So I need to learn some lessons that I would have had time to learn had Trump not gotten elected.
So what do you do now, Andy? I mean, are you going to fundamentally change your life? Is this now like, are you going to become, I mean, is this going to be like one of those like Kwai Chian Kang moments where you like decide to go just wander the planet or what? What's going to happen?
Well, here's what I think. I think that I made the mistake of that people can make all the time of assuming that life works the way you want it to work because it should work that way. I mean, one of my big gripes in general is, you know, like CNN, like I hate, you know, it's like I argue with, you know, I heckle Chris Cuomo all the time.
I saw that. He responded to you the other day.
Oh, he loves it. When I say he, you know, go home and take your handsome pills or whatever I say to him, he hates it. So it's like the idea that this is the first time in history anything horrible has happened, or the idea that the only way I could live is if Obama's presidency was followed up by Hillary Clinton's presidency or a Democratic Party, you know, that is just something I have to get over. That's not the way the world works. I mean, I am scared because I feel like, you know, if Goldwater had won in 64, Goldwater's not, there's nobody worse, there's nothing worse that I can think of in this country has happened than Trump getting elected, because you literally are electing somebody who doesn't have an idea in his head. So it is very scary. But this idea that I had in my head, like that progress would continue along a certain continuum, that was a mistake. And, you know, I don't know if you listen to Bob Garfield or on the media at all, but he's a very bright guy, and
he's good.
He's talking about how, like, you know, all the things that happened socially so quickly have caused this rightward tilt with the government and the media. And, you know, it made me understand a little bit more, but I just think I have to get a grip on myself.
Did you listen to his interview with the white nationalist leader, Andy?
What's that?
Did you listen to his interview with the white nationalist leader?
No, I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, it was very creepy. But I don't know if that will help settle you down, but it was interesting. But the one he did a couple of weeks ago with Glenn Beck was hilarious. That was very funny.
Well,
I admire people like that, because I am not able to have... I get so upset that I lose my ability.
Well, comedians are not known for necessarily like the most amount of emotional stability and having full,
right.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, that's, it's not like he's that funny.
No, he's not. But yeah, right. So, I do like,
but I think that's a good point. I mean, I think it's a good point you bring up. I mean, I think there is definitely reason for concern, and I think we have definitely been set back on basically every front in terms of, you know, I don't know how many, maybe it's going to be decades, maybe it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, you know, climate change is a real thing, and that's not going to say, like, well, We're gonna moratorium on climate change so that we can just ride this whole Trump thing out. That's not
arc of history is long, guys. Let's stop warping.
that's not gonna happen. But it is, I think, like, I don't know. I think there's something about people our age too who are a little apocalyptic because we were born, you know, with the millennium sort of like staring us in the face. I think there's something to that. Around the millennium, there's always like millennialistic cults, right? And
yeah,
and if that's on a spectrum, then people tend to see things in an apocalyptic way. I think there's a rational argument that, you know, it could be a problem to have someone who's a complete incompetent hiring a bunch of lunatics and being advised by a white nationalist who sort of has some type of chaos theory about revolution, advising him with the closest. I think that's a rational fear.
Right.
But it's not going to end on the 22nd. Let's put it that way. I mean,
right. But also the rage that I have, you know, and which I have to get a handle on, is like, I'm just shocked that these people, like, you know, I've hated Bill Maher for years, so it's become a cottage industry for me. But it's like, this guy feeding right in, like, I think one of the things he said right after the election, I don't watch him anymore, but someone said right after the election, he's like, well, the one good thing is that Trump, you know, Trump and the Muslims. It's like, how are these people, you know, to me, I made a joke on Twitter that he actually is alt-right, Bill Maher. That's what his act is alt-right. It's this, like, guy who's hiding behind saying whatever comes to his mind, he's going to be a radical, and he's feeding into the same thing. They're feeding into that same rounding, you know, the Trump people and the new atheists are all going the same place. And I couldn't have anticipated that would happen, I guess.
Andy, will you do the Bill Maher impression, please?
Well, tonight on the show, I have the head of the Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Laboratory, my old job. you know, and of course, Obama is back in the White House saying, oh, I'm a black man from 1968. Hello there. Hello there, Dumbo. But I kid the president.
Because he's my president, and he is a cool black guy.
I mean, he really does do, like, I mean, I said that the wrong way. I put Dumbo in there. But he did, for years, do, why can't Obama be the angry black guy? He actually did these jokes. you know, why can't he be like Superfly? Why does he have to be the nice black guy?
Well, Andy,
I'm sorry. You like that joke?
No, I just
Sam. I don't really understand what's so controversial about that. I wish that, Obama was like Chef as well.
That's like literally around the office. Like 2 days ago, I said I don't like Bill Maher, but I love that. Why can't he be the angry black man joke?
Well, that's true. But you've always said, look, if someone does a joke well, you have to appreciate it. Maybe you don't like it. But
you guys want to save space?
The majority of the majority
report. It was totally constructed well. I mean, that was the important part. The construction of that joke was awesome.
Well, you know, I do, and I am preaching to the converted, right? Because there are a lot of people who like Bill Maher. Well, there are too many people like Bill Maher.
Well, you're not preaching to the converted. You're preaching to the choir. And the choir does, you know, they're the ones who do the bake sales. I mean, that's it.
What are you, Groucho? When did you turn into Groucho?
No, that's actually like, that's more of like an aphorism than it is a joke.
Confucius say. But the elephant thing earlier.
I love Bill Maher. I just don't get it. I guess they like new rules or something.
Well, I mean, part of it is that for a long time, he represented the only voice of dissent under the Bush administration. And,
that's true.
And I think people still have an emotional connection to him. And to a certain extent, it also sort of like, you know, again, reinforces like what the silliness of people, frankly, on the nominal left who, you know, I say nominal because I don't think their policies are any more left. It's just they have tactics that they perceived as more leftist in some way, which I guess means you want to disempower yourself. But the story of Bill Maher is a perfect example of a guy who became sort of a hero on the left, despite the fact that his politics were not left. It was just that he was dissenting against a Bush administration, one of the few voices of dissent that had access to the mass media. And we're going to head into a period of that again, where, you know, some guy like, you know, your buddy, Chris Cuomo, he may end up being a hero of the left because he's willing to sort of occasionally say something that is contrary to the truth. I don't anticipate that necessarily, but who knows? And that's the problem with this. You know, that's one of the problems, at least from a perspective. It's sort of maintaining, like, you know, just saying that Donald Trump is a jerk, or, you know, has a toupee, or was the minority, you know, president, is not enough, at least in terms of policy going down the road. But I know that I don't want to. This is,
it's like Gandhi.
You remember Bill Maher before Bush went into Iraq. Bill Maher in 2000, he was doing the, I don't like this election. It's Gush versus Boer.
Yeah.
Gush, and he was a Nader guy.
Did he literally make that joke?
He did.
Oh yeah.
He thought it was so great. We have Gush Boer. Oh my God!
Stop why laughing, people, Matt.
How could that have been considered humor? In what country would that be considered humor?
Well, I mean, maybe a country where English wasn't the first language, and they were really impressed by switching the first letters and how you could really change.
It's like some Saudi prince. Like, look at this shift. This is a very funny man.
If you were to do that in Farsi, it would change the whole meaning of everything. But he switches it with those one letters, and it's just like it makes a joke. It's amazing. English. Andy.
Oh, man.
Andy, as sort of I feel like depressed as we both are on some level, I feel like this has cheered me up.
Well, you always cheer. This, I mean, you cheer me up. You guys cheer me up on election night, and I was so scared to call in. I didn't want to call in. I was so depressed, and I had my brother on the phone because I convinced my brother that you know, Nate Silver was right, and you know, I totally convinced myself that all these polls were going to be right. And I was so, I couldn't have been more wrong.
Well, no, you could have been more wrong. I mean, look, at the end of the day, she won by 2.5 million votes.
That's
in
true.
Terms of the popular vote. She lost three states that, you know, there was more incompetence involved there. Obviously, the polls there didn't pick up what was going on. But so you could
call
have been
me, James, call me.
You could have been more wrong. But I mean, you were wrong enough.
Andy, we really cheered you. We really cheered you up on election night because I felt
the fact
like
that we were all
that
depressed.
We were going through it together. Okay,
we were just here's what we're doing. Here's what we did for about 15 minutes.
Yeah,
we literally did that.
We're all on the phone, just going.
But the odds.
I think at one point
it's like the.
I think at one point
the odds on Nate Silver kept changing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think at one point you had to say like, "Are you guys still there?" yeah, we're here.
And then we would just say, "I can't believe this is happening."
And then we ended it with, "All right, well, okay, maybe I'll see you guys. Maybe I'll see you after the if we're still alive."
Onwards and upwards, Andy. Onwards and upwards.
Look, everybody. I want everybody to say that I will be your clown for the next 8 years. You come see me in the club.
Don't say 8 years.
No politics.
Please.
It's all going to be what's the deal with toothpaste? who's the genius rocket scientist that came up with the idea of the space program? It's all going to be observational, kooky. I'm going to have characters. Let's put this in the back of our mind.
What's the deal with the Islamic internment camps? It's jeopardizing the flight schedule. Are we still going to have meals just for Muslims that are kosher for Muslims on flights when they're in internment camps, but it's still on the menu? How do you break Ramadan when you can't eat in the evening either?
I am literally writing, I'm literally recording this word for word, and this will be in my act. Are you kidding me? This is gold.
I don't mind if they're deported, but I still want burritos. What's going to happen?
Then you just shift. When we're in the internment camps, to just like, can you believe the food around here? What do they have? Like some type of...
For a guy who owns hotels, the grub here sure is boring. How many times can I say
I'm already shopping my Roberto Benigni update.
Yeah, there Oh, God. Oh, Andy.
How many times can you say the guy's daughter's a 10 before you get let out?
Next time you're on, you have to preview the entire internment camp set that you've developed, all right?
I will work on that.
Let's pretend Matt's the kid. It's a big game,
Have you seen the bunk beds we're all sleeping in? No wonder why they closed the Trump Tower in San Bernardino.
I don't like to complain about food, but this is not... This is not goulash, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Andy. We'll be in touch. I'll talk to you later. Thanks,
I love you guys. Have a great weekend.
Love you, Andy.
Be cool. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? Did you guys?
Yeah, I don't have it.
Well, look it up. Just all you got to do is search.
I did look for it.
Are you serious?
I'm sure it's in there. I'm having a problem in my Safari with the email.
What? That sounds like a story.
It is a story.
Thank you for calling in the Majority Report. Please leave a message.
Jimmy ladies and gentlemen, you know what that means. I am, I'm leaving a message for myself right now. That's
smooth
a big mistake.
Move.
Smooth move, X-Lax. What, are you getting anybody? Is anybody, do you have the song? Just search in the Majority Report thing. Everybody's looking at like Matt was literally like cutting his cuticles. Literally. Hey, Kelly, talking off camera about it is not going to. No, I don't.
I wouldn't encourage. I'm looking.
Thank you for calling in the Majority Report.
I mean, I know it's obviously a top priority.
Well, let's just get it. Did he send it? You
I'm
have
looking.
It?
I'm looking.
You have it?
I'm not.
Why can't you look?
Well, because you're logged in. I have to log in and log out.
here we go. I'm gonna play it. I got it. Oh my God. All right. Oh wait a second. I don't know if this computer. Oh wait, this. No, this computer will not play it.
I don't want to sign in and sign out. So you find it, God damn it. Because if I sign into a computer,
I'm
it's too much.
I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to wake everybody up here. All right, so.
It's just, it's all right.
All right. Just
exactly
a reminder,
like
ladies and
Flash
gentlemen.
Song.
It is your membership that makes this show possible. We've gotten some very, very nice emails. Just being very, it's very gratifying for us to get these type of emails. I mean, we, of course, we get a lot of like, I can't log into my account because, but we also get a lot of emails. We've gotten a lot of emails literally in the past couple of weeks talking about how important the show is to them. And it's, those emails are just incredibly gratifying to us. It's very helpful because these are difficult times, and we're going to go through some fairly difficult times. And I don't know. It's very helpful. But obviously, if you can afford a membership, go to jointhemajorityreport.com, sign up, support what we're doing. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. If you drink coffee and you want a bunch of different great coffees to choose from, and you want to buy fair trade, and you want to buy from a co-op, you can also buy the Majority Report blend at JustCoffee.coop and use the coupon code Majority to get 10% off. It's a win-win-win-win. And if you are buying your crap from Amazon or Jet.com for that matter, go to MajorityReportKickback.com, click on that link, bookmark it, buy your crap through there, we get a kickback. All right, do we have the Jimmy Griffin cake song?
Yes.
What's
it's
called?
Express Myself.
Express Myself.
Might not last that long.
We'll see.
I want you to express yourself.
All right, turn it off.
To me. But do you want me to express myself to you?
No.
Or am I just your little jingle boy? Another of your Majority.fm toys. I told you that for me this all ended when in New York State Bernie lost to Hillary Clinton because I could see things tearing apart. Back then, that's when I broke my heart. So I sang songs about third-party ways. And I still believe the third party has a part to play. But do you want me to express myself to you? I want you to express yourself to me. Here's the dum-dum left. How dumb am I? Oh, delusional thinking, tell me why. Once again, you have all the answers. I'm sure you're also working on the cure to cancer. I'm sorry this anger boils up inside. I'm sorry my disdain for Hillary Clinton I never could hide. But please just let me express myself to you. Thank you, everybody. I think that's all that we really have to do.
Well, that I don't know. I thought that. I mean, that was. I mean, it was a little, almost a little creepy.
It was a sort of.
It was almost a little creepy. Like the first part of it was almost a little creepy. Another one of your Majority.fm toys?
I hope you're talking about the dolls that Sam does have a weird fixation on.
That's true.
But if there's anything besides that, it was kind of a sort of a, yeah, it was a very intimate plea for a fair listening to the Dumb Dumb Left.
It was an intimate It was uncomfortably
intimate.
I might
sort of
change.
Feel like this That's may have been something. Because it was a threat.
What was the threat? He's going to break up
anger.
With me? He's going to break up with me?
There's a lot of anger he's feeling. Oh, I hope that it was cathartic, the song, making the song. Right. But he really went through something over the last song. So.
But that's not all that we really have to do. We've actually now got to do a lot more than that. I mean, we've always had to do a lot. But now it's going to be very defensive. I mean, that's all, you know. We're just going to be, there's going to be no expansion of... of rights. And, you know, for everything that is taken away, I mean, there was some very good actions in Chicago, in L.A., yesterday, the day before, for the Fight for 15. And it's conceivable to me that in those cities, you may see something similar to what we've seen in Seattle and New York. But many of those people are going to lose their health insurance under a Trump regime. Expansion of Medicaid is going to get collapsed. There's not going to be any of that federal money. States aren't going to be able to make the money to fill the gap. There may be some, but so those people, you know, I don't know if it's, I mean, you know, obviously we saw the success of the Fight for 15 campaign during the Obama administration, but you know, the idea that somehow this is going to galvanize stuff is just, I'm sorry, it's silliness. People are going to spend more time trying to salvage Medicaid. Because it doesn't matter if you get a several hundred dollar a month raise if you don't have health insurance when you get cancer. I mean, I guess it's a mitigating factor, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't fight for that. Obviously, we should. We should fight for anything that we can get at this point. But people, you know, and I don't know if it's really necessary for people to realize, frankly, that there's no net gain. Maybe it's helpful for them to maintain their delusion.
We actually need to do everything we can to make their delusion at least, I don't know, a fraction of reality now.
Well,
it's
kind of
like what's incumbent upon us.
I mean, if that keeps people fighting, then good. Because there's going to have to be a lot of it. But next time around, if we do get back to this spot, you know, like I say, we can reconvene and have this conversation in 6 months. I guess we should do a Freebie Friday at this point, yeah? Well, actually, let's head to the fun half. We got another 40 minutes. All right, we're going to head to the fun half. Folks, see you next week or in just moments in the fun half. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Take your call. Got a lot of people queued up already. Take your IMs. Be right back after this.